I don't know if. All right. Okay. So, yeah, please take it away, Florian. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much for the introduction. So as you can see, I slightly adapted the title even of my presentation now. So I'm talking about ActGPT and our vision of large language models for CERN. So the very short agenda is I want to introduce ActGPT, then also the model which is behind, and I want to show some examples, and then the current and future research topics. So with the introduction, ActGPT stands for Accelerating Science GPT, because our vision is to accelerate the CERN research with AI. So this is also perfectly matching to what you described in the introduction, Gaia, for this workshop. And ActGPT consists basically out of two things. First, we have the ActGPT pilot service, and we have the ActGPT model. So the ActGPT pilot service is containing the entire service, which is providing large language model to CERN researchers. And also we are hosting a large language model, or we are providing access to large language models via the user interface, which is similar to the one from ActGPT, but also via API for developers if they want to run, for example, their own use cases. And ideally also we plan to assist with the large language model use cases for the implementation. So if people are not so much aware of how to use large language models, and we have already some template use cases, we can show them how to do this. And then on the other side, we have the ActGPT search model. This is an advanced expert model, which is currently for CERN internal knowledge search. I will show more on this on the following slides. So first, a few more words on the pilot service. So the goal of this one is really to have one central AI or large language model unit to provide access to large language models, to internal and external models, and to assist the developers with some expertise and usage examples, as I already mentioned. And depending on the resources which CERN would dedicate, this could be even some kind of consultancy that, like, people come and say, we have this and this problem, and then expert comes and could take this over. And the current status of this, it's still, as I mentioned it all the time, it's still in the pilot phase. And the reason for this is that CERN has not yet decided to put further investment into AI or large language models. And this is a bit of pity because we went through all the CERN hierarchy levels and we got the support of like everyone literally at CERN, but CERN management doesn't want to decide to put more resources into it. So here I will also show something more on the next slide. And yeah, what we currently have is very limited resources. This is on the one side, the manpower to actually do something, but also on the other side, the hardware and access to large language models. Therefore, we are very restricted. And due to this, we only are able to create some proof of concept models. We have already something into production, but to get to this limit where we are satisfied with the accuracy and everything, it's very difficult. So here, just to mention that CERN wants large language models. So this was a survey which we made only in the ATS sector. So I'm from the ATS sector, from the BIMS department. And we were discussing, or we are discussing that we want to have access to large language models. So we made the survey, and we had 24 groups participating across the entire ATS sector. So they were very nice distributed. And as you can see here, like 75% of these people said yes, they really want some large language models. And then there's some percentage where they are not sure if they have use cases or not. But the message also from the other questions which we asked in the survey, which I don't show, was really clear that a lot of people really want and need access to large language models, and a central service would be like the ideal where not everybody has to look on his own how to get access to large language models and how to implement things, because a lot of people have similar use cases in mind. So now I want to talk a bit why ActGPT. So the first step which we were trying to cope was to enhance the CERN knowledge retrieval. Because as you know, CERN has many and huge databases, and it's challenging to find information if you don't know where it is. For example, I always, still when I try to gather some documentations which I want to add, I always find new documentations and I said, oh, it's nice, I didn't even know that this exists. And yeah, here you have the major ones, but then there are also individual documentations about whatever is there. And also we have on the other side support tickets, which could be also very useful because what's currently the case, if you don't find anything, you just open a support ticket but maybe like 100 people before you did already the same. So with using these support tickets, we can already make a very nice chatbot, which can help. And this is also the objective. We want to have a chatbot to improve the knowledge finding, the user support, and also to streamline developing processes and to enhance onboard experiences with some frequently asked questions. But there are many other things we could use this for like chatbots. For example, we have a lot of software frameworks. These are some frameworks we use in the BIMS department, and they all are very difficult to use if you are very new to them. And they also AI could help to use them. Then on the other side, we have a lot of code and documentations which contain code. So we could also use large language models to help with this. For example, when you are new to something, you can say generate me a code template of something. And if there's already like a nice structure, then it could do it. And then it could even a large language model adapt to what you want to use it for. And then there are some future applications we have also in mind. So we want to enhance the machine and shift logbooks. This is probably also the same for all of the experiments. I, in fact, was also already working at CMS and was using the logbook very often. And this is also an issue which all the other institutions have, which you can find here. And we were writing a kind of a white paper how to use AI for logbooks and looking what other people are doing about this. Then also we could use code agents. I will in fact have a slide at the end of the presentation to quickly show what this is if people don't know it. And yeah, our future vision would be that we really have AI assistants in the control room, like a conversational user interface where you can really control the accelerators. But I think this is far until there, but we are already dreaming. So now let's look a bit to ActGPT Search and what's inside. So again, ActGPT Search, what I will introduce in the following, this is the knowledge retrieval chatbot for some internal knowledge. And here I show you the core ActGPT pipeline. So this is basically existing out of two models, an embedding model and a large language model. And how this works is, so the user comes with a request or question, and then we use an embedding model to find the data which is closest in the database. And this data we then provide to the large language model as a relevant context. And the large language model constructs then out of the question and the relevant context the response. And yes, those models are accompanied with the self-created knowledge database. And I will show more on the two models on the following slides. So here we have first the embedding model. And the function of the embedding model is more or less to map textual data into a Latin space. The model which we have has, for example, a 1024-dimensional Latin space. And it can embed single words, sentences, or entire paragraphs. And the goal of this is the embedding models are trained that related phrases are close in the Latin space. So, for example, what you can see here on the right of the slide in this picture, I made a principal component analysis and I just show here the two principal components, the one and two. And here I want to show that, for example, all the terms with physics, they are very close to each other, whereas, for example, any other unrelated terms, they are far away. So this there you can really see that this embedding model tries to put things close into the embedding space. And then how we use these embedding models is to find, for example, when I look for CERN, then I find, okay, physics and high energy physics are close vectors, so maybe I retrieve some data from this. So also what I used to say on this slide, it's a bit unfortunate that when we have here all the CERN stuff, that artificial intelligence is a bit far away from this. So I would wish this would come a bit closer. Yeah, and currently we are using this open source embedding model, so you can look this up if you are curious about it. Then about the second model, this is the large language model. I think I don't have to tell much about it. Everyone knows it, knows these models. And these are just huge models which try or which can understand and generate human-like language. And yeah, so how we use these models is, so this I provide here on the right. So the large language model input consists out of the system prompt, which we construct, then the user prompt. So this could be the question, and then the relevant context, which was provided by the large language model. And then we generate out of this the large language model response. And our goal is to focus on open source models, for example, the Llama family. And also here to mention, we currently don't fine-tune large language models, so we really use the large language models as they are. And also to scale a bit up, we are also using external models by Grok, and I put it down here. So Grok is the Grok with Q and not the Grok with K. It's not the Twitter Grok, it's a different one. Okay, now I want to show some ActGPT examples. So here, first, this is our user interface. It's a very similar user interface to the one of ActGPT. This is open source. We didn't create it on our own. It's named Open Web UI. And for example, here we have one model selected, but here also on the top, you can see you can select various models. In our large language models pilot, we have, for example, models from OpenAI, then some models from Grok, and also locally hosted models. And also one of the models, which is apparently not shown here, is the ActGPT model, which can do the sentimental knowledge search. So here I have then one example. One nice feature is also that you can select two models side by side and compare the responses. For example, here I ask what is ActGPT, and I have our ActGPT model and the GPT-4o model. So ActGPT has the knowledge or is connected to the some internal database, so it can respond to some questions, as you can see here. Whereas GPT-4o, it has not the knowledge, the some internal knowledge, so it's just hallucinating. And here, just another example. So maybe this is not the ideal question, but I want to point more or less out. So what are the highlights of ActGPT? It always provides a response, but also the URL as a reference. So if one can click easily on this and then look the information up and can also confirm if the provided response is correct or not. Because also, as we saw in the previous example, these large language models, they hallucinate. And also our ActGPT model is not yet perfect. So that's why I put a disclaimer here. So we don't guarantee that the responses are correct. And we encourage the people to look up the references and confirm this. And also we have here some feedback buttons, so you could even provide some feedback and we can look it up later. So now a bit on the accuracy metrics. So I just want to go quickly over this slide. So in blue, we have here the ActGPT models, once in the configuration where we use the GPT-4o model as generation, once the Llama model. And here in this answer relevancy metrics, you can see both models perform more or less similar. So it's not even required for this kind of use case to have the latest model or the best performing model. And then here is the red bar. We have the plain GPT-4o where we don't have the RAG, the retrieval augmented generation included. So this model is not aware of the CERN knowledge. And what you can see here, we have a clear knowledge drop. And yeah, and this is due to the fact that there is no connection to the CERN database, that it doesn't know all about CERN data. But also, it's worth to mention that this value is not zero because many questions in the data set which we evaluated, they are not exclusive to CERN. For example, we have a lot of IT-based question answers in our data set. And for example, some Linux documentations, they are not exclusive to CERN. So that's also general knowledge. So that's why we have here still some accuracy. Okay, then also what is very important is the data quality. So not only the ActGPT model itself determines how accurate it is. Also, I guess you know all the saying like garbage in, garbage out. And that's why it's important to keep your documentations updated, detailed, and it's good to remove duplicates because otherwise it's very difficult for the model to decide. For example, if you have an older version and a new version, which is now the correct one, then text-based information is currently still the best. Pictures are also fine, but not yet as good. And ideally, FAQs, like frequently asked questions and some examples, is always the best because then the large language model can take this already. And for coding, it's always very good if you have some templates or examples. This makes it for the model easy to adapt to the use case of and the question of the user. And this is just some information this one could keep in mind if one makes a documentation and wants to make it in the future accessible for chatbots. So now I want to quickly go about the new features we are currently working on. So we have now, in addition to the user interface, also a Mattermost integration. And this works as easy as writing in any chat ActGPT or slash activity and then the message. For example, here asks how to find the MLP documentation, and then it's providing the response. So as I already mentioned this, you can write with in any chat, so even like into channels where you collaborate with your colleagues or a single person chats, but also you can open a dedicated chat. So you can go here on adding a new chat and then search for activity, and you can open a chat and ask activity questions. But here to mention this, I found out it's sometimes buggy. So sometimes it's working for users, sometimes not. Sometimes it even works, and on the next day it doesn't work anymore. And we don't know yet the reason. So we're still working on this. And also, unfortunately, we still have there an old activity version. So it's not aware of the latest things. So about the next steps, what we currently work on. So I quickly want to introduce large language model agents. So agents can do subtasks by calling functions. For example, what I created here, I created agent which can call the CERN phone book. For example, one can ask, what is the phone number of me and where is my office, for example. Then it's calling the function, the CERN phone book search function, which I predefined already before, and it's asking this my name. And it's returning all this information. And then we put this into the large language model, and the large language model is then summarizing it. So this is my phone number, and this is the office location. So now you have even my contact details in case you want to contact me afterwards. And yeah, so here, but I want to mention, unfortunately, this is a feature which, in my opinion, would be very nice when we want to have like one user interface, one central point where you can access all the certain information. But unfortunately, this will not come due to data privacy reasons, and also the CERN phone book team doesn't want to want this integration. So they would rather want the people go to their web page and search there for the people. So, and how we want to use this agentic behavior. So we want to create a new activity version, which we call activity agentic. And how this compares to the normal RAG. So the normal RAG, what we have before, the normal activity is just a simple single-step retrieval workflow, whereas the activity agentic has a multi-step workflow. And this I want to show you, for example, based on this question. So what were the major activities and upgrades carried out during the CERN long shutdowns, during each of the shutdowns? And then, for example, the large language model is splitting down this question into multiple steps. So first it's making a retrieval search about the long shutdowns, then the timelines, then the shutdown 1, 2, and 3. And then it's combining this information for one grounded response. And the advantage of this is that we get answers which are more detailed and complete. But on the other side, we have the weakness. Currently, this is a sequential step. And of course, as you can imagine, this takes then more time than a single step if you have, for example, like here, 5 steps. And also one downside is then that more large language model calls are required, which makes this also a bit more expensive. And yes, currently we only have the simple activity RAG search included, but we want to include more tools. For example, like the phone book search would be, in my opinion, cool, but as I mentioned, we cannot do this. And we already have one activity agentic version running, but we still have it only for internal testing, and we will see if we can maybe soon also publish this on the user interface for testing. Then the next thing, even one step further ahead, is the graph RAG. And with graph RAG, we are utilizing a knowledge graph instead of the simple RAG, as I showed before in activity. And a knowledge graph, in short, is a network of connected entities and relationships where we want to structure this information. And this graph is generated by large language models. I put here, for example, one graph of our database, which we currently have, which we created. And you can see, or it's difficult to see, but each of the small dots is one entity, which is describing one point of CERN. For example, here, this huge dot, which is almost connected to everything, this is like entire CERN, or this is the CERN entity. And you can see here all the relationships as the lines to other things. And here, for example, you have another cutout of this graph where you have, for example, the injector chain, and then you see that Lear and Linac is very close. This is maybe not the ideal example, but at least you can see here that close things or that related things should be very close in this graph representation. And yes, the strengths are it enables precise retrieval across complex interlinked data structures. and it generates high-level coherent overviews across large knowledge domains. Then the weakness is this graph creation is very time-consuming and expensive. So I think the creation took like 4 days and about 1 million large language model calls. So this is quite costly, as you can imagine. So one cannot update this every day. And yeah, we need to research a bit more if we can simplify this or so. Then I think this is the last example I want to show. There also exist now these coding agents, and they are different from the standard large language model agents because they basically generate a code as it's as an example is shown here, and then they also execute the code. And they can do this in an iterative process. For example, if they write the code and execute it and say they run into an error, then they adapt the code and run it again. And this is very nice because I don't want to go here into this example, as you probably don't know about it. We want to retrieve here something from the LHC software architecture, so some parameters from the LHC. And as you can see here, like we are going through multiple steps, or maybe I go a bit into detail because otherwise I cannot explain what I want to say. So first we want to retrieve some parameters, and then afterwards the settings to all of these parameters. And for example, these parameters variable, it's like a list of 135 parameters. And then afterwards we want to forward this entire list again to the large language model to retrieve the values. And because this can be enormously long, the large language models could make mistakes in this. And that's why it's much better to use these coding agents, because you can put these parameters into a variable and the large language model does not even know about this. And ideally, this entire process could be a one-shot thing. So we ask this question, the large language model is providing this code and running this code, and you get the table as an output. Whereas, for example, if you have the normal agents, it would have to run each step independently. So also you have more large language model calls. Okay, now I want to summarize up my presentation. So we have ActGPT, the CERN large language model pilot, which is still in the pilot phase. And on the other side, we have the ActGPT search model, which is a proof of concept model for some specific knowledge retrieval. And we already achieve a very good accuracy, and but we are also still about improving ActGPT, for example, with the agentic, and also maybe we include the graph. And with this, maybe we have an even better search. And we achieved already a lot with very limited resources, but there's also much more potential, and we I would say lack a few more resources to bring everything very well to production to make it CERN-wide usable. And yeah, as I showed on the last slides, we have many developments and research currently in the pipeline and ongoing. And I put here also some resources. So here's what knowledge we have currently included into ActGPT. Here we have a landing page and where one can register. And then here access to the user interface. After registration, you can even go to the user interface and ask questions to ActGPT. And yeah, this picture, maybe this sentence summarizes everything very well in one sentence. So what we are doing is really is very cool. We are researching on the edge of the large language model technology, but unfortunately, we lack a bit the resources to scale it to production. Okay, with this, I want to finish my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Florian. Are there questions? If anyone raised, yeah, there is Giacomo Fedi. Please go ahead.
Yeah, on slide 18, you mentioned the test you can you go on slide 18? I don't remember
Slide
exactly what.
18, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so this
Okay.
one?
Yeah, this is about the test. So you have I read curated the data set from experts. What does it mean? Do you have you produce your own questions, that set of questions, and
So
how?
this means, yeah, let me quickly answer to this. So this means really we went to the experts. For example, the Linux documentation, we went to one of the support guys and asked him to provide us with 10 question and answer pairs, and ideally also the URL where this information can be found. And based on this, we evaluated. So we had, I think, approximately 100, maybe a bit more, question and answer pairs, which were provided by the experts on which we run this. So this was not just anything what I created on myself.
Okay, so you have questions, and how do you check how good they are? I mean, how do you get the answer?
So, for example, here we used the answer relevancy matrix. I have to admit, I don't know exactly how this is constructed. So I put here a link, and I think you this links to a presentation where you can find all this information, because we generated more than 10 different metrics on which we evaluated the ActiveDB chatbot, and this is just one of those. And unfortunately, it was not me who did it, which was a student before, and I don't have all the insights how this was done.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for the question.
All right, any other questions? If not, I have a really quick one. You mentioned this white paper on using LLMs for logbooks. Is it something already like happening, or is it an idea you just throw now?
So this was more or less just an idea. So we were going in contact with each other, and we were discussing what people are doing and what our visions are, what their visions are, and also what they are doing, what we are doing. And this is currently only what the only thing interaction which was happening. So probably other institutions, they already progressed further on this, and they really working on their ideas. For us at CERN here, this is currently only something in our minds and something we want to do.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm just curious whether there was already some structured thoughts about how to
Unfortunately, not.
improve. All right. Okay. But yeah, that would be great if it happens. I also see Raghav as a question.
Hey, yeah, thanks a lot. It was a very cool talk. So, yeah, I had a couple of questions. So, how often do you scrape the other text, and how and in what format is that stored?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So currently, so let's say all these scrapers are already automated, and we could run them like, for example, every day or every week if we want to do. But what we are currently doing is more we run them as we think it's reasonable. For example, what we do currently is now more or less every month, because also we add always new knowledge to the scraper. And then when we have some new knowledge, then we run it again and we create a new database, because as it's currently, we then create a new ActiveDB version which we host in the user interface. We want to run some tests before, so we don't have this automated. So the answer is once every month. It could be done more often or less often as one desires. And as it is done, so basically what we take into account is only the text. So we scrape the HTML, then we convert it to text and remove everything which is irrelevant. We put some metadata into this, for example, where this web page is coming from, the URL, if we have also the date when this specific page was created. And yeah, that's basically it. I don't know, does it answer already all your questions?
Yeah, I think so. And what hardware do you have to actually run the model that we're seeing?
Yeah, so for this, we run it on machines which have A100 GPUs. This is unfortunately now the only thing we have. This limits us also to the model sizes we can host. And as it's also shown here, currently what we host are the 8 billion parameter models, but also we access large language models from Grok, and there we go with the Llama 4 Maverick model, which we then actually use for inference.
Okay, so these are just a GPU that CERN has bought and is dedicated to this
Yes,
chatbot.
So we in the collaboration here, we have four GPUs dedicated to this, but unfortunately these are also only this A100, which are already outdated, and they are not interconnected. So these are standalone GPUs, so we could not combine them to run a huge model. So we can on each of them run only a small model.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
There's one more question from Lloyd.
Thanks for the talk. I had two questions. The first is, I saw that you were using the Llama 70 billion model. Is that 3.1, 2, or 3?
Where did you see this? On which side?
On the slide that you were using, one of the models that were being picked out, you had a Llama 8 billion and you had a Llama 70 billion model.
Oof. Okay, I don't know. I also don't know the answer. Probably it was the Llama 3.1 version, because I think with the 3.2 version, there was once this restriction that they had a higher data privacy or whatever, and just they were not officially allowed in the EU, if I'm correct. I don't remember, but I think we started with the 3.1 version.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the only reason I asked, so we were doing something kind of similar, and we noticed totally transformative results when we switched to 3.3. So
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that. And the other thing I mentioned I wanted to ask was, how hard was it to get the Mattermost chat stood up? That seems like a really cool application.
Yeah, this is something really cool. I didn't do it on my own, but basically this is just an API integration, and it should be more or less straightforward. So if you contact me, I can put you in contact with the guy from our collaboration who did this. I think this is really something very easy where you just connect the API backend, and then it should work. As I said here, it's not always working, but it should work easily.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, I think we can. Thanks once more, Florian, for the talk and a nice discussion. And move to our next speaker. It is Daniel.